the DOK for doing the soups and all the foods, and all of you who brought so many side dishes and so many other things, plus all the Katie and all the staff that set up the tables and stuff. I want to thank you all for all the work that's gone on. You know, this whole plan for this Lenten series was supposed to dovetail with Passport to Wellness. And so, as you all know, when Passport to Wellness was supposed to kick off on that first Sunday of January, I fell down the Friday or the Thursday before the first. So I was kind of out of the loop, but it sounded like it went really well because it all came together, and the staff and all the work that, you know, all the folks that were involved on that committee for Passport to Wellness has really done well. That is a part of the wellness of a person, the physical part, but also to have your wellness really be in check. You know, you're created, you know, with, you know, emotions. You're created with, a spirit. You're created in a much larger way than just your physical sense. And tonight what I'm going to try and begin to move into is tying some of this together, but going after from, as my own unique way, the spiritual element of how it all ties together to be well. You know, to be well is a lot bigger picture. And let's put it online here. How many people know somebody that is just a hard body and just seems like they're so physically fit, but emotionally they're a mess? You know, spiritually they're you know, crazy. You know, it's a balance. It's a balance, and all of them work together. They all work together, and they all are interdependent upon each other. You know, I wanted to start out because, as you saw the title, it's about GPS. And the parts that I wanted to start with actually started for me back in 1990, I was struggling within myself, and then in 1991, I got into recovery from alcohol. And when I went into recovery from alcohol, to tell you the truth, it was a huge enlightenment to me. I mean, as I used to put it, you know, in 1976, I came into a personal relationship with God through Jesus Christ. I let God come into my heart. And God came into my heart, to be honest with you, when he came into my heart, I was with him when I needed him, but a lot of the times I was up in my head. You know, I mean, as I always put, I went to my summer place. And then if I needed him, I'd commute down to my heart and I'd be with him to get through things, but then I'd move out. When I got into recovery from alcohol, I began to move to where I cohabitated with the living God. And cohabitated with him. I didn't do a great job. I'm not exactly what you call the best roommate that he's ever had. I guarantee that. But the truth of the matter is, I began to look at things differently, and I began to apply them to where living life was not just where you sort of had a set of theology that you could espouse or a position on issues that you could, you know, really say, but it was where all of a sudden it was something that was going on in me that changed me, that, as I put it, I left a little bit of what I used to be and turned into a little bit more of what I ought to be. You know, it was the change, the transformation that took place. About, I want to say it was about 3 months to 6 months into recovery, I was with my sponsor. I was at a church in Winter Park, as most of you know. I was at, there was an old deli restaurant, if you ever know it, on Park Avenue, Brandywines. Anybody know where that is? Brandywines, I used to eat there, you know, at least once a week. And I was sitting in Brandywines with my sponsor, and all of a sudden this guy walked in, and I looked over and I saw the guy walk in, and my sponsor looked at me and he said, "See that guy over there?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "He's the guru of AA in Central Florida." He goes, "I'll introduce you to him." Well, the truth of the matter is I went over and I met him. His name was Brock Steele. And Brock Steele had gotten into recovery early on into you know, when the program really was just starting, and was the main guy in Central Florida that had a whole lot of time and a whole lot of history and really knew how to walk the walk that you have to walk for recovery. He knew how to do the steps, and he wasn't just one of those kind of people that sort of, you know, was rigid in himself, and you looked at him and said, well, my God, you know, if that's recovery, I'm going out and drinking, which, to tell you the truth, there's plenty of people like that that I've met in my life that are, they're dry, but they aren't real lively, okay? Brock was alive. I walked up, and Bill, my sponsor, introduced me to him, and I'll never forget, he looked at me and said, well, that's strange. He goes, you're a priest at All Saints? I said, yeah. He goes, I used to be the senior warden at All Saints. And he goes, I used to be the senior warden at All Saints, and I'm going now to see your rector because I'll die here not in too many years ahead, and I want to make sure that I can have my funeral at All Saints. Well, I was the associate rector at All Saints. I looked at him and I said, in my egocentric, cocky way that I have so well developed, I looked at him and said, you don't have to worry about the rector. I'll take care of that. And he went and had his meeting, and the rector kind of said, yeah, but I said, look, there's no worries about it. I can guarantee you can. Over the next few months, I got to know Brock Steele pretty well. And it was interesting because as I got to know him, I began to see the wisdom and the depth that he had. That whole introduction was to lead up to one event that took place on Park Avenue in Winter Park, right near at the park, right across from the Barnett Bank building, and I was sitting on the park bench with him. He looked at me and he said, have you ever read a book by Emmett Fox called The Sermon on the Mount? And I said, well, yeah, I think I did back in seminary, but, you know, I don't remember. And then he looked at me and he said, I want to tell you something. That, for me, was where my recovery and my faith in Christianity came together. He said, what I've learned there is that as I live life, that sometimes I get lost in life. And that sometimes when I'm lost in life, the way to find my way home is I go to 4 points that I learned out of that book that Emmett Fox wrote. He said, I move towards asking myself, how complicated have I made this? Let's keep it simple. He said, then I came to the conclusion from that book that I had to be humble in all things. And humble for me was being honest. Just seeing it as it is. Not the way I'd want it to be, but as it is. He said, I learned to live where I began to say, if I'm in a difficult situation, I ask myself, am I living in the moment? Because he goes, I have a habit of getting way out ahead of me or rewriting it over and over and over again, the past, and getting hung up on what went on in the past. He goes, I do that especially in relationships. And then he said, I always look to see if I have a hard time struggling with my faith of believing that I'll get through this, that I'm grateful. Because when I practice gratitude, it's like a handhold of faith bringing me up. When I can't really feel faith, if I begin to practice gratitude, somehow faith climbs back in me. He said, you don't have to do all four. One might work, and sometimes you might practice one and it doesn't work, but if you go through that list, sooner or later, one of those, simple, humble, live in the moment, or gratitude, is going to work to bring you back to where you're not lost in the life that you're in at that point. Somehow you will feel a power greater than you bring you out and bring you through. These next 4 weeks, I'm going to try and deal with just those things. Simple, humble, live in the moment, and gratitude. And tonight is going to be simple. It's funny because, you know, all everybody knows the old saying, kiss. Keep it simple, sexy, okay? I'm not going to go stupid, okay? But keep it simple. Do you keep things simple? Not long ago, as you all know, I broke my leg. It was on January 4th that I broke my leg. On January 5th, I had trauma surgery. That was after having surgery only 5 weeks prior for a hip replacement. And it was interesting because, you know, I would have said at that moment that I was just, you know, being really grateful and going through it and thanking. In fact, I remember being in the ambulance, being taken to the hospital for the first time and thinking, you know, I can't make this about me. I got to make this. If somebody says, how are you doing? I don't care how bad it is. Don't talk about yourself all the time, which is not always easy for me not to talk about myself all the time. And but ask them how they're doing. If somebody says, I'm going to pray for you, then pray for them too. And it was interesting. You know, pain, though, has a way of creeping in and changing the good stuff that you have and the good intention you have and bending it and mixing it around to get into the other side of it. Well, you know, I had the surgery on the Friday. I was in the hospital Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Monday night, Sally got me home. We got home. It was not a pleasant ride. I mean, I couldn't bend my leg. I was in a car. I was stretched out. You know, every bump you felt. And I went to bed that night, didn't sleep real well. The next morning, to be honest with you, all the side effects of being on, you know, medication and everything else kicked in, and it was not fun to be in my house. And on that morning, let's just say the tension in our house, I wouldn't say was very low. Sally was being great. I'll be upfront with you. She was an angel in coming through, trying to get things together, get my wound together. I was the biggest ass you've ever seen in your life. I mean, I confess to you right now, I was just a total ass. And all of a sudden, I saw myself engaging her and mad at everything and frustrated. And here I am. I mean, it's simple. I got a broken leg. I'm dependent upon her especially, and I'm dependent upon a whole lot of other people. Don't you think it'd be good if I was nice? Don't you think it would be good if I was kind? Well, I mean, I was not. And I was at the point where, to be quite frank with you, I was at the point where I was just angry. I was frustrated, the whole thing. And I thought to myself, it ran through my mind, I wonder if I'm going to get divorced out of this. Then it ran to my mind, I wonder if she'll murder me. I knew I couldn't get to any weapons, so I knew I wasn't going to murder her. But then all of a sudden, lo and behold, I'll be honest with you, the biggest fear of my life came. I could go to Ocean View. And I was like, oh my God, I don't want to go to Ocean View. Now, why is something so simple? And I mean that. It might have been a complex break, but by this time, I didn't have anything to do with that. I had to do just exactly what I was told to do. And I was in a lot of pain. But, you know, that's not an excuse. You know, I mean, there was ways of mitigating that pain. There were ways of getting around that pain. And I was uncomfortable, and I couldn't sleep, and all those other things. And that all exaggerated where I was. But why did I make it so complicated? Why was I argumentative about absolutely everything when here was a person trying to help me, telling everybody else what to do? Why was I thinking that me, who was totally powerless and totally vulnerable, trying to be the center of the earth and do it? You see, keeping it simple gets you away from making yourself the center of the universe. If you really look at your life and you think to yourself, wait a second, let me just keep this simple, then the truth of the matter is you don't get in all that drama. You know? Anybody here know somebody else that's got drama? I know none of you have drama, but I mean, you know, that has drama in your life? You know, I mean, and it's nuts, isn't it? It's where all of a sudden something so small becomes huge, and it's like, all I needed was a yes or a no. You know, I thought about that in regards to the scriptures. And when I looked at the scriptures, you know, I was looking through how, you know, and trust me, in all the scriptures, especially in the Old Testament, every one of the Old Testament, you know, patriarchs and stuff, they could screw up anything. They could make something so simple. Just follow me, obey my ordinances, and everything will be okay. But right from the start, I mean, Abraham, You know, I mean, God says, I'm going to bless you, go to the promised land, stay in the promised land, everything will be okay. He gets into the promised land. The moment he's got a little problem, what's he do? He runs off to Egypt. And when he gets into Egypt, what does he do? He immediately says, oh my God, I'm in Egypt, and my wife is really smoking hot. And you know what's going to happen? One of the pharaohs is going to want my wife, and they're going to try and kill me to get my wife, so I'll say she's my sister. And so I'll make her my sister, and, you know, and, well, that way is fine. And so he makes her his sister. Then Pharaoh does say, she's smoking hot. I'm going to take her into my house. And all of a sudden, he realizes there's a problem. And he says, wait a second, something's not right here. And they sends him out. I mean, go through every one of the patriarchs. Isaac does a whole thing. Jacob's the best one of them all. I mean, Jacob, he could mess up anything. He's always ready to steal from his brother and lie to his father and the whole nine yards and make it all complicated. Why is it that we so often as a human being want to make it worse than it really is? Why is it as a human being do we try and sort of circumvent the simple things that God gives us to follow and try and make it into something where we want sort of him to follow us? The scripture I picked out for tonight to echo this was actually kind of interesting because it's from John chapter 6. It's in the New Testament. And it's the story. John chapter 6 is the feeding of the 5,000. And if you look at the feeding of the 5,000, it's interesting. In Matthew and in Luke, it says that he fed 5,000 plus women and children. In John, it doesn't say that it was 5,000. It just says that he fed them with 5 loaves and 2 fish, so they put together and they say it's the same event. And in there, he feeds the 5,000, he feeds them with 5 loaves, 2 fish. When he's done doing it, after healing, after teaching the whole nine yards, it says that Jesus is exhausted. He goes off to a mountainside to rest and be by himself. Meanwhile, the disciples can't figure out where everything's going on. They get in their boats and they try and go across the lake to Capernaum to get out of there. Now, Jesus, in the middle of the night, right after that, he's up there on the mountainside, and he sees that the disciples are in the boat. The winds are head on. It's getting really rough out there. And then the miracle of the walking on water takes place. Jesus walks down. He walks on water. They think he's a ghost. And boom, once he gets in the boat, they get to the other side. Now, the next part of the story is really kind of interesting, because the next part of the story is the people that have come out to the middle of nowhere to listen to Jesus and get fed, like the 5,000, they want to follow Jesus. They want to find out where he is. So what do? They find out that they've left by boat, so they get in their boats, and they go back, and they go to Capernaum. When they get to Capernaum, all of a sudden, they find Jesus. And Jesus, you'd think, would say, isn't this good? I got a bunch of groupies following me. This is so good. I got people following me. This is good. You know what Jesus says? You're only following me because you got your stomachs filled. That's it. You're following me because you're filled. You're filled up. And then he says that line that many of you know. He goes, you know, you ought to look not for food that goes away in a day, basically, but for food that lasts for all eternity, the living bread of life, of which I am. At that point, they look at him and they ask this question. They say, what must we do to do the work of God? What must we do to do the work of God? It's John chapter 6, verses 28. And Jesus' response is really interesting. He says this, to do the work of God is to believe in the one who he sent. Now, I don't know about you, but that's not complicated. Not at all. And what he's saying in there is this. Why did he say not believe in God? The reason why he didn't say believe in God, I believe, as you follow the scriptures, because what was the understanding most people had in those days of God? That he was a vengeful God, that he was going to get him, that he wasn't loving. And the Gospel of John, what does John say throughout the whole Gospel, every turn? God is love. And what did Jesus do at every turn to everybody that crossed his path? He showed love. And so he says, believe in the one who he sent, because he's saying, look, you got to believe in me, because the way you're understanding the Father is not accurate, but I'm going to show you who the Father is. I'm going to show you who the Father is. It's not brain surgery. It's really not brain surgery at all. What it is, simply and clearly, is that, that's an Amber Alert, I'll tell you right now. That's okay. It just happens. I'm surprised mine's not going off, so you're forgiven. Don't worry. I'll get me too in case mine goes off. But the truth of the matter is this, is that you got to keep it simple. You got to move it in a different way where you're not looking at things so complicated. But when we get wrapped up in our own self, when we're unhealthy physically, when we're unhealthy emotionally, and when we're unhealthy spiritually, we try and make ourselves the center of the universe. And we complicate things. Jesus said real clearly, let your yes be a yes and your no be a no. Anybody here ever gone into a discussion and asked maybe somebody, might have been your spouse, where all you needed was a simple yes or no answer. But you didn't get yes or no. In fact, you might have got an answer that lasted a half an hour to 45 minutes. And you still didn't get yes or no. And somehow in the midst of it, the place that you asked that question for went there, moved over here, then it went over there, then it went down here, and then it went all over the place. And by the end of it, you're like, let me out of here. I just want to get out of here. You see, things don't have to be complicated. In regards to your body, the truth of the matter is that, you know what, you want to get in shape, you can go and do all the exercise you want. That might get your cardio better, but the truth of the matter is if you really want to get shape and you want to lose weight, then you got to not eat as much. I remember when I first came down into New Smyrna Beach and I joined the gym that I'm at now that I love, Nautilus. It used to be down by Publix, and a guy by the name of Byrne was the owner of it. And I went in to look at Burn, and I was at least 30 pounds, maybe 40 pounds heavier I could have been. And I walked in, and I said, you know, I really want to get in shape. I want to work out. I just run the Disney Marathon, so, I mean, I knew my cardio was good. But I'm still way overweight, and I walked in, and I looked at him. I said, Burn, I really want to get in shape, so tell me what weights I need to do to get my stomach down, my chest up, the whole nine yards. And he looked at me, and this is what Byrne said, Jim, he's from Germany, Jim, if you want to lose weight, you do not have to push weights. You need to push yourself away from the table. You want to lose weight? 3 meals a day, no desserts, no seconds. If you discipline yourself like that, if you drink water before you go, I'm telling you right now, you're going to lose weight. And you'll lose weight in a healthy way, and you'll change your metabolism. And I guarantee that within 3 to 5 months, your whole body will be starting to operate in a different way. It's not complicated. I remember Sally coming home one time. This was just before that. This is when we were in Fort Walton. And I was like, I want to lose weight. And she goes, this new South Beach diet. And she goes, you need to read the book. I said, read the book? I'll eat the book. I don't want to read a book. Just tell me what I got to do. And the truth of the matter, she goes, just eat 3 meals a day. Don't eat seconds and you know, no desserts. You'll lose weight. You'll be in shape. And you can be clever with it. You can be smart with it. You can do the whole nine yards. Emotionally, it's the same deal. Why do we engage so much? I mean, why do we take things personally so much? I mean, are any of you, please do not raise your hand. Are any of you somebody who, that if somebody says something that's just a little bit off, you immediately take it personally against the other person? Why not take things on face value? Try it for a day. Try it for a day. Take things on face value. That's it. If they say this, just say, okay, I'm going to just take it as that. Don't argue. Move on. If it doesn't really affect you, just let it go. You know, live and let live. Why is it that so often in times, you know what, because we live with people, we sort of get to know them? Have you ever had to tell somebody that you're, you know, connected to, a spouse, a parent, a child, something that you know they aren't going to like, but you think that you've been honest and fair about it? But when you go in there, you're scared to death that you're going to tell them because, oh, I know how they're going to react. I know what they're going to do. I know what they're going to do. Well, let me tell you right now, I do believe in good marketing, you know. In other words, when you do tell them, try and phrase it in the right way. But if they do go down the path of where they're upset, if you've been honest and fair, it's not on you. Don't feed into it, because the truth of the matter is, if you feed into it, it's going to go on for a lot longer. If you don't feed into it, I guarantee that other person is going to correct themselves a lot quicker. But if you feed into it, think about it with your own kids. When your kid comes in and they're all upset and you're saying, hey, listen, we just have to, it is what it is. You know, here's the parameters, here's the boundaries, you got to do it. And they try and get you in there, and they actually try and almost mold and shape you into where you're upset, as much as upset as they are, because then all of a sudden, who has the power? It's a bargaining for power. And to keep things simple means that you don't have to give power away. You see, if you practice those things in your physical experience, and you practice those things in your emotional experience, then your spiritual experience is going to probably follow suit. If you think that you got to get everything together in your mind and everything together, I have to be so totally right, well, that's never going to happen. No offense. We are works in progress. We're always going to have problems. We're always going to be mixed up. But the truth of the matter is, if we practice in little steps, in little ways, then all of a sudden everything else will fall into place. If you are spiritually healthy, you have a better chance of being physically healthy. If you are physically healthy, you have a better chance of being emotionally healthy. If you're emotionally healthy, you're going to have a better chance of being physically and spiritually healthy. Because it all works together. You work on principles. And spirituality isn't complicated. Spiritual truths are never complicated. You know, God might work in mysterious ways. I'll give you that. But he doesn't work in conspiracy theories. He only works in flat-out truths that sometimes you have to wait on and sometimes you have to ponder. Most of us try and say, if I just follow the Ten Commandments, if I just do the right rules, then I've got it all right. The truth of the matter is, you probably won't. But if you just follow the fruits of the Spirit, which, by the way, are those fruits of the Spirit that are so true and right, you know what? Love, peace, patience, kindness, forbearance. If you practice those in everyday life, you'll be doing the Ten Commandments. If you practice those in everyday life, you'll be in relationship with others in a way that will be refreshing. It won't be a burden. If you just practice that with other people, all of a sudden you'll be falling into the thing where all of a sudden your life is simple. And you can come away saying, keep it simple, sexy, because you really will be doing it. And you will be more attractive than you've ever been in your life, because the truth of the matter is when you have that peace that passes all understanding coming from practicing the fruits of the Spirit, life's changed. Life's changed in a big way. You know, all of you have at least one person. I want to take for a second one person that really irritates you, that you're related to, that you got to deal with. Don't tell them that you're irritated. I don't want you to do that. Don't worry. But think about that one person. Then go through the fruits of the Spirit. Go through that simple task of looking at the fruits of the Spirit and pick out one fruit that you're going to say, when I see that person, when I talk to that person, I'm going to do more to concentrate on the fruit of the Spirit that I think I've got to live in to deal with them than even actually participate with them. The fruits of the Spirit are charity, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, generosity, gentleness, faithfulness, modesty, self-control. Think of that one fruit of the Spirit that you think, I've got to apply this to this person. You know, there's a person in my life that is a pain in the tail. I mean, they're the kind of person, when they call me and I know I have to return the call, I usually pray, God, I promise you I will return the call, but please let me get an answering machine, you know? And what I started to do was I started to look at this person, because every time it is, it's always this drama, and it's like, you know, every time I have to call this person, I think to myself, well, it should take 30 seconds, but I'll be on the phone for 45 minutes to an hour. You know those kind of people? I came to the conclusion that what I needed with that person more than anything else was kindness and gentleness. Every time I talk to that person, before I go, I ask God, give me kindness and gentleness. It's amazing how fast that call goes now. Because I don't give him anything to argue about. Even if I disagree with him, I just simply say, well, that's your opinion. You know, you're entitled to that. I don't know if I can agree with that. I'm not going to engage you, though. But I say it in a nice way, and I'm kind. You know what? My life is better when I do that. I don't know if his life is better, but my life's a lot better because, to tell you the truth, I don't get all turned up inside. We all have people we get turned up inside. They may live in the same neighborhood. They may live far away. They may be a relative that you don't see except you hear from them on Christmas. But we all have people that we are doing. And God calls us to be in relationship with them, but it doesn't mean that you have to just survive through it. By practicing the fruits of the Spirit and keeping it simple, you don't survive through anything. You live through it. You live and you live and you learn. And you learn from what's gone on because somehow you hear the Spirit more clearly than ever before. And you'll hear truths that'll go on. And you'll laugh to yourself. You'll laugh to yourself about, you know what? I didn't buy into their stuff. Because when you buy into somebody else's stuff, guess who becomes God in your life? When you resent somebody, guess who becomes God in your life? And it's not you. When you put them in that place of power, you lose your spirit. God gave you that spirit as a gift. The faith that you have starts to dwindle. But when all of a sudden you go into that place where you say, live and let live. I may not be able to change them. I might not even get them to like me. But you know what? I can live through this. Then God somehow smiles upon you and lifts you up. And it's all because you kept it simple. The people of God came to Jesus. They came to Jesus. They had followed Jesus. They had had their bellies filled at the feeding of the 5,000. They'd come across the lake trying to find Jesus in Capernaum. They come there. Jesus basically chews them out a little bit. And then all of a sudden they said, what must we do to do the work of God? And he says, to do the work of God is to believe in the one who he sent. It's that simple. As you go home tonight, I pray that you go home thinking about how you can apply what God has gifted you with in the fruits of the Spirit. Because you all have the Holy Spirit, every one of you. But how many of you tapped into the fruit? How many of you ate from the tree? Because when you eat from the tree of the fruits of the Spirit, not only does your life change, but every life around you becomes manageable for you. And your life becomes a way that is simple and straightforward and honest. I pray that you do that this evening. And I pray that you grow more closely to the living God. You know, even in the midst of breaking my leg, I'll be up front with you. I learned so much from it. It sucked. But I was so blessed in the midst of it because there were so many people that came to me that cared for me. And there were so many times that I thought, wait a second, I'm looking at this all wrong. And even in the midst of it, God was active and worked in it. And that's what's real. And that's what makes us healthy. And that's what pushes us forward. It's not us. It's Him. And it's in His name that we pray. Amen. Thank you all. I think we're good to go. Get your food. There's plenty of desserts. Please do not leave them here. I'll eat them.